It's April.
Hi, Baba. How are you?
Hello. I'm okay.
Yeah?
I'm getting better.
That doesn't
I still
sound
can't
okay.
walk, really.
What'd you do?
I thought I told you.
Did I forget
you.
Something?
I guess not. I don't know. I doubt it. I probably didn't tell you. I was messing around with Owen on Christmas Eve, and I chased him, and I slipped and went into full splits.
Oh, yeah, you did tell me that. Holy crap.
I think I tore my hamstring. I'm going to have to text you a picture of the bruise on the back of my leg. It's like the size of my whole hand, not the palm of my hand, and it is black, black, black.
Wow. Yeah, you busted some blood vessels while you were tearing something.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
It was, like, so painful. So I'm like, I can't
split second, right? Split second.
What?
You're like, fine, 1 minute.
Oh, yeah.
You're fine, and then all of a sudden you're not. Bless your heart.
Yeah. Mm.
So, and it is.
I feel so useless.
Yeah, well, you're showing up for yourself tonight, so you did at least one thing today. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to try to take this very similar to the flow of the conversation with you and Connie, but focused instead of kind of wandering, and finite, right? So you were ready to follow me anywhere. We explored a lot of big ideas, but I need to teach myself how to speak to someone who's never been exposed to this. I still.
Yeah.
Fire hydrant then. Hello? This is Kylie?
Hello?
Hi, it's Kylie. This is Kylie. Yay! I'm so glad to finally hear your voice.
I'm actually only going to be able to be here for a little while, though, because I'm actually on a lunch break at the moment, so I'll join you for as long as I can anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me what the time difference is. What time of day is it there?
It's midday here, on Thursday.
Midday on Thursday. Okay. So we ended up with two. So the other person on the line with us is April. April, this is Kylie.
Okay.
She is in Australia, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm in Sydney.
All right. So is there a time, because it's the two of us, and April and I have worked together in the past, and I kind of know a little bit about her availability, is there a time of the week that works better that would still be daylight in our time zone?
That I don't know. Because I work from sort of 7 in the morning. I need to leave home at 7 in the morning, and I don't get home till about 5 at night. So it's kind of tricky, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Well, stay as connected as long as you can today, and I will do some scheduling, looking at scheduling. And we may shift to the other call so that you're able to get in for all of them.
Okay,
so,
no worries. That'd be great.
So let's start, because it's a small group, and I love small groups because everybody then gets to talk, and it's a little safer place to come and really try to be as vulnerable as you're able to be in any given moment. So I'll start, and then I'm going to ask each one of you to just give a little 2 minutes about why you're here, why you said yes to spending this bit of time and money, what your goals are, and then what your biggest fear is at the end of January. So you guys probably know a little more about me than I know about you. I am currently 366 pounds, which is 25 pounds lighter than when I started 2017. I learned to coach because I was trying to find a weight solution. And over that time, I have found what feels like the keys to the kingdom and knowing that I don't need to solve action so much as I need to know what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking it. And every time that I am willing to look at that and feel the feelings, then my body is willing to let go of weight. And so for this month, we're going to talk about what building the foundation for that looks like. What do you already have? What are you missing? What do we need in order to get you ready to build on that premise? Okay? So, April, you'll go first if you're willing. Why you're here for this, what you want to weigh, what's your biggest fear?
Okay. So, let's see. I hate these things. I should be talking about myself. Okay, so I'm here because I had the opportunity to work with you so much before, and so I jumped at the opportunity to do it again. Kylie, Melinda has made such amazing change. She's helped me to make amazing change in my life around my relationship to food, my relationship with my husband, my relationship with myself. And so it really was a no-brainer for me to join in on this. I am at a point right now, I'm ready to lose 75 pounds, and I'm actually really ready to do it this year. I would like to do it all in 2018, or at least get as close as I possibly can.
Are you willing to say what your number today is or what that target number would be?
It's okay. No, I'm okay. Yeah, my number today is 214, which is down a pound and a half since New Year's Eve when I just said I'm going to start tracking again, I'm going to start carrying again, I'm all in.
Okay.
And so my goal right now is a pound and a half a week if I can do that. But most of all, I'm just focusing on
214,
being aware.
So that would make you 2135? Is that the number, the goal number?
Yeah, like 140. 15. I would be happy anywhere 150 and below.
Okay, good deal. Okay, and the worst fear?
My worst fear? I don't know my worst fear. Losing my family, I guess. I mean, does it have to be anything?
No, specifically about weight and trying to lose weight this time.
I think my only biggest fear would be that I would continue lying to myself about what I'm putting in my body.
Okay, good. So I used, let me make sure I finish writing that so I'll remember it. I used this time instead of again, because one of the things we're going to do at least in this hour and a half a week is leave out all the stories about when we've done this before. And I'll say more about that after we hear from Kylie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Kylie, your turn.
Yes.
Why are
you here? Okay. So, yeah, I joined because I've been following you for a while, and I think we tried to speak at one point. At some point, it didn't work out. We'd have differences and stuff.
Right.
At the moment, I'm 340 pounds.
Okay.
Sorry, I usually talk in kilograms. So I'm
convinced. Right. Thank you.
So 340 pound is what I'm at the moment. Now, I celebrated my birthday in March 2017, and I was in Bali for my birthday in March, and at that point I weighed 356. So I'm down about, 15 pound?
Yeah. Okay.
Since March last year. My father passed away in April, and I actually live with my parents. I'm 45, single, live with my parents. Moved back in with my parents a couple of years ago when my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and he died in April of cancer all through his body. So now I'm living here with my mother, and I'm finding it quite hard to separate from my mother in a way, like, you know, my own doing, but also her bit of a guilt trip and all that sort of thing. You know, all of that's part of it. But I've kind of decided that I need to do something about my weight. And it's kind of odd though, because I kind of have the feeling that it's more a feeling that I should lose weight. I think I have a really good life. Like, I think I feel like I do whatever I want to do. I don't think my weight holds me back from doing anything. Actually, having said that, no, there are a couple of things my weight holds me back from, or that I put off doing because of my weight. So I know that that's part of it. But it's more a should around losing weight.
Okay.
I should lose weight. And
okay.
I kind of need to get my head around that, to either get beyond the should and say, this is what I need to do, or to get comfortable with the weight that I'm at and not have it be a thought in my head.
Right. Okay. And what's the number that you'd like to be at? If you could just wiggle your nose right now and be at that weight.
Well, to be honest with you, my lowest weight ever as an adult was, and sorry, I'm going to do some numbers here. So my lowest weight as an adult was about 180 pounds. So that's okay. The lowest weight I've been as an adult. And that was probably, so I put on that weight in probably 15 years.
Okay.
In the last 15 years. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I think I would love to be back at that weight because I think I felt my best then. However, at the same time, I still thought I was fat then. I still thought I was fat then. So it's a real sort of, just a head game. Yeah.
Okay. And the worst.
But I don't think my life's any different now to what it was then.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's actually a really good place. And it mimics where I was when I started. I liked myself okay. I was okay with looking myself in the mirror, but I definitely felt societal pressure to lose weight. And at, say, 330 pounds, there was nothing I didn't do. But at 360 pounds, my mobility started getting challenged. And I was like, my machine of a body cannot tolerate this. And I need the machine of my body. I don't mind being fat, but I don't want to be impaired. So you're actually in a really good place.
And I think that's a big thing when I noticed when I was, you know, the 350 kind of thing, 356 is where I was at my highest, and I was traveling to Bali and things like that. I know that sitting on an aeroplane was hard, you know. I mean, I booked myself two seats because that's what I need to be comfortable, but I allow that for myself. So, I don't know. It's a mind.
Okay, so that's going to be interesting. So what's the biggest fear about this month in particular? About showing up for these calls and the investment you make in this particular set of coaching.
Yeah, I can't, you know, like I could say my biggest fear would be not losing weight, but at the same time, as I've just said, I don't feel, it's more the leaving the month and thinking I still should be losing weight but not having done it.
Gotcha. Okay. Good deal. All right. So,
sorry.
No, it does. Because, again, that's our old way of thinking, right? I'm going to start I don't know what you have there, but I'm going to start a weight loss program, and I need to see pretty immediate results in order for me to stay hooked into this. I want to see it work. Yeah. It's kind of the way we've been conditioned. Okay. If you don't have it already, you're going to want to grab something to write with and water or something to drink. For whatever reason, these kind of conversations always seem to be dehydrating.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So for the next hour and a half or however long Kylie's able to stay connected, there's a couple of things that I want you to do. As we start going back and forth and you're telling me about some of your stories and the foods that trigger you, because tonight we're talking about triggers, how do you sabotage yourself? Who are the people that trigger you? What are the memories that trigger you? And when we talk about weight loss or stories about people who trigger us, I don't want to talk about anything that's older than the summer. And that's going to feel awkward and weird because we all want to tell a story about something that happened to us last year or 10 years ago or 7 years ago. But all of those stories have power that is pulling in the negative direction. And so I want you to be able to hear you talk about the things that are currently making you eat in a way that adds weight to your body. The things that are currently making you procrastinate, that are things that could be addressed as opposed to older pain, which coaching works great on, but in this 30-day period, we'll get lost in too many details, okay? So it's a new practice, and I got this great quote right before, something I was reading right before I got on with you guys, that says, weight loss is not an event, it's a habit. And that so fits into the things that I teach, that we are never, at least conversations you have with me, we're never going to talk about doing anything that you're not completely in agreement with, that you're not excited about, and nothing that you won't do until. Okay, so we're not going to give up alcohol or chips or cake unless we're really ready to be done with that. And for the foreseeable future, that just doesn't speak to you anymore. Okay? So let's start, if you have the pages that were printed, let's start with the thought model. Kylie, have you been exposed to the thought model before? Do you follow books?
Yeah, I
have. Have you seen it from my stuff? Okay.
Yeah,
all
I
right.
have. Yeah.
So this is our kind of our holy grail of how we solve things. And you'll notice that action is the fourth thing down the list. And action is where we always need to start with weight loss. I'm going to start a new diet. I'm going to start going to the gym. I'm going to get up early and walk. All action-based. And based on experience, we know that something happens. No matter how good our intentions are, life gets in the way. Something interrupts us. We go off track. We lose focus. And we're all of a sudden back into whatever our routine has been for years. Okay? So if we change one action, we will get some results. But they're usually kind of that trampoline results. You go up 5 pounds, down 5 pounds, up 5 pounds, down 5 pounds. If we can look at one thought and change one thought, then multiple actions change. Because how you think is what's driving the decision-making that you do. Okay? So the circumstance in our case today is going to be losing weight. Okay? Our bodies have more adipose tissue on them than we want them to. And it seems to maybe be out of our control. There's at least enough factors that it feels kind of like testing jello to the wall. And so let's start with the thought that you have right now about losing weight. And this will be kind of we'll go back to this on the fifth week and see if we've been able to shift at all. So, April, the thought that you have about losing weight, just as April losing weight, the first thought that pops in your head.
It's hard.
Okay. Kylie?
Mine would be, yeah, it's too hard, or I have too far to go, or why bother?
Okay. Which one of those, like, shut your eyes for a half second, and
yeah.
Which one of those rings the loudest?
I've got too far to go.
I've got too far to go. Okay. The others? Too far to go. The others kind of cascade underneath that, like it's, yeah, I've got too far to go. It's going to take too long
yeah.
if it's underneath that. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And that
yes.
that core one is thinks it's protecting you. Like, why would you put on all that effort? You might fail. And it is a biological response, thinking that it's protecting you. Okay. And so then the feeling, April, the feeling that's generated in your body when you say it's too hard or it's hard.
It's dread. It's yeah, it's frustrating. Frustration.
Okay. Do you feel it in a specific part of your body? Belly, chest?
Not that I can pinpoint head. Right now, no.
Okay, Kylie, what's the feeling that goes with, I've got too far to go.
Hopelessness. Hopelessness is right in my gut. Right in my gut. Right in my stomach.
Okay, so I want you to kind of take a snapshot of that feeling. That gut feeling, because you're going to see it as we go through this. You're going to see that feeling pop up in places you might not expect it. And that's that questioning voice, like, why am I really doing this? And your body will know way before your head is aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you've had that feeling before every time that we've just let go of a diet. Every time we went, yeah, like, this wasn't the time. Or there's something going on with the kids, or dad passed away. You've had that same little deal, like, yeah, okay, so I can let it go. And when you let it go, that feeling seems to move away from you. Until you do something like get on the airplane as a 340-pound person, or have somebody look at your card at the grocery store or something else. Okay, so that's a good transition for triggers. What are the things or people, so the food, the places, or the people that trigger that emotion in you? Okay? Kylie, if you're willing, you can go first this time. So when you think about losing weight, and that prevailing thought is I've got too far to go. What food is it that's your default go-to food?
I don't have a food as such. I just have a lot of food. And it can be, it can be what's seen as healthy food, but I just eat a lot of it. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm an equal opportunity eater, you know, sweet, savory, eat it all. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So how does it start? Like walk me through one of those episodes from the time you're like, this is going to happen.
Yeah, it's just the thought in my head. It's too far to go, so why bother? So then I just feel hopeless and I just go to the fridge and get whatever happens to be there. Because I know at the moment I've set myself up in a way that I don't have rubbish food in the house or the snacky, bingy kind of foods in my house. So I found last night in particular, I was sitting at home, I finished work for the day, work was stressful, sitting on the lounge, doing nothing. I need to lose some weight, hopelessness, go to the fridge, eat whatever I could get. And, like, it was literally eating mashed potato. Like, it was, you know, it's just anything.
Yeah, okay. So as you're taking, what do you feel as you're eating? You've now gathered your forage and you're 5 or 6 bites in. Do you feel that hopelessness start to calm? Or what do you feel? Or does it amp it up?
For
or what do you feel?
It numbs it out, definitely numbs it out.
Okay, all right. So how full are you?
Feeling temptation?
How full are you when you finish? Are you like, need to lay on the bed full?
Okay. Probably not quite, but I know I've eaten too much. I can feel it in my stomach. I can feel it in my body. I can feel that it's too much. Yeah.
Okay. And so what do you say to yourself then when you're at that point? You've eaten, you're aware that it was the motion that you were eating for, and you now you've just got to wait it out.
I either beat myself up and go, you're hopeless and eat more, or I will say, oh, well, that's okay, I'll start again tomorrow.
Okay. All right. So hopelessness is a running theme, at least in the part of the conversation that we've had so far. Are there places or people that trigger it, that trigger you to eat in a way you don't want to eat?
I think at work, definitely. And I think to a degree, my mother's also got a weight issue and I live with her full time and she often brings things into the house that I don't necessarily want to eat, but I eat because they're there. And I just think, I think sometimes she triggers it as well.
Okay. All right. So that is more of a community kind of trigger than an anger or stress trigger. Okay.
And work would be a stress trigger. Yeah.
A stress trigger. Okay. Are there other places in life that you feel hopeless, or is this the one area where you feel that way?
I think I feel a little hopeless around my work at the moment as well. I've been in the same job for sort of 15, 16 years, and it's something that it's okay. It pays the bills. It lets me have my next holiday. I'm off to Fiji in 8 weeks' time and all of that, but I don't love it anymore, and at the moment I find it a bit stressful as well, yeah.
Okay.
In my job, I feel a bit hopeless because I feel like there's nowhere else to go, if that makes sense. Yeah, I feel stuck.
Gotcha.
There.
Yeah, and you're 45. So, yes, I can absolutely see. And that's kind of where a lot of women start to make these discoveries. It's like, okay, so I've got at least another 20 years on the planet, and I don't want it to be vanilla. I want to have some passion and some adventure, probably not right, but connectedness. Okay?
Yeah.
And how,
I don't feel dread.
How connected do you think you are to your body, the partnership between you and your body?
Do you tolerate each other? Yeah, I think we tolerate each other mostly. Sometimes I have a lot of compassion for my body, if that makes sense. Like I sometimes think, what have I done to you, like in a way. Most of the time we just tolerate each other. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that, and again, that's a good visual because, again, that's how most of us start. We have to spend time with ourselves, but it's like being in a really bad marriage
where nobody's leaving, but we're trying to talk as little as possible, and there is a fair amount of passive aggressiveness going on. So the eating is almost identical to being passive aggressive with another person. Right. Did you get that little dig I just gave at you? All right. All right. What would happen, do you imagine? So you're at the place where you were last night. You're fixing to go to the refrigerator. You know you're going to. And this cycle's going to happen. What do you imagine would happen if you didn't? If you did not eat in that space?
And you know what? It's really funny. I've actually thought about that before because I've done the thought model work before. And to be honest with you, I think I'd probably sit and cry. And I think I kind of avoid that emotion as well. So I think I'm just frustrated with myself about it.
Right.
Okay.
So so we're going to come back and dig around there in just a minute. Because crying, so what happens with the food is it's actually a chemical release in your brain when we start to eat. And crying would do the same thing. Screaming does the same thing. There's lots of other things in between those two polars. But crying, that is not an acceptable solution, is an interesting place to have some more conversation. Okay, April, triggers. Food, people, places.
Right now, I think my biggest trigger is my husband. Because he's, you know, very healthy, very fit, so it doesn't, food doesn't affect him the way that it does me. And we've been going out to eat a lot, so it is a community thing. It's, you know, being together and going out and getting away from the kids, kind of. And lately, and I don't know if it's because of the holidays or just general, I don't know. I've just been having a kind of a free-for-all with food.
Okay.
You know, old rules out the window, order the big pizza, order whatever you want, you know.
Okay.
And he triggers me, and then I trigger him right back.
Okay. So in that moment of being triggered, what's the feeling? When you know you're like, I'm fixing to go eat.
Oh, it's true. Sure, who cares, you know? Yeah.
Okay. And is there a feeling in your body for that? When you screw it, is it like being released from school early? Is it like...
Yes, it is. And then later that night when I'm just stuffed beyond belief, then I'm like, you know, that's when the beatings start up. And then, you know, the next day I try to overcompensate, but lately it seems that I just go back. It's almost like I have amnesia, you know. 5-6 o'clock rolls around and it's like, oh, you were so good all day. Just go out and eat pizza. You do what you want.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. And so I keep asking about what's the feeling in our body, because right now our minds are in control. And our minds do that bargaining. They do the shaming. They do the little guilt thing. They say, hey, yeah, go be free. And our body is just kind of on the end of a long crack the whip and is getting flogged for all of those decisions. Okay? So if I offered to each of you that shame is involved in this process, if I said what you're actually feeling, the hopelessness, is actually goes a little deeper, and it's shame, would you agree with me or argue me to the ground that that's wrong? Kylan?
I would say so. I think, I would think that's possibly true, yeah.
Okay. April?
I want to argue with you.
I know. I know you do.
I feel like I've done so much work with you around shame that I feel like I should be done with that by now. But no, yes, it's still there, for sure.
Yeah, except you're still human. And shame, I remember the first time you and I had that conversation, you did argue me to the ground. And then you go, oh, yeah, maybe that is. And so the reason it's important, two things, I don't want to call it shame if it's not,
But if it is, shame is like cancer in your body. It grows. It metastasizes. And you guys have both kind of already described that as one, so like eating then brings you into another hopeless cycle, which throws you into another hopeless cycle, and then you've spent weeks there with trying to figure out how to break out of it, like without taking some kind of drastic action that you know you don't want to take. Like you don't want to go and have bariatric surgery. You don't want to go and drink all your meals for 6 months because we know that doesn't work either. And so then that hopeless is kind of the valley where we spend most of our days. Okay. So there's two worksheets. Let's look at them real quick. One is the shame
Amanda,
vaccination.
Just so you know, I can't get into the course. I don't have a login for it
yet.
So I wasn't able to get the login. That's okay.
I'll send the worksheets to you on email after we finish. For now, some of this is you've seen before. So let's start with permission slip. And this is an idea taught by Brené Brown that is so helpful to me. So if you were to break out of this, suddenly you just had all the tools that you needed, you had solved all of your old thoughts, and you have decided that you're going to take care of your machine of a body that needs a certain amount of protein, a certain amount of fat, it needs a certain amount of water and a certain amount of sleep, and you knew what all of those things were, what would you need to give yourself permission for in order to take that kind of care of yourself that you don't currently have permission to do? So, for instance, one of my first permission slips was to take time for myself without asking anybody else for it. And this was after my kids were already grown. I was the master of my time for all intents and purposes. But I always felt guilty or like I was betraying someone else if I took an hour to do nothing but something that was pleasurable to me. Okay? So, April, you need to go first this time. What do you need permission to do that you don't currently have permission to do?
I need permission to spend the money on the good foods to put in my body.
Okay. And so put some parameters around that. Like what you spend on groceries now and what you would need to spend on groceries if you were buying all the food that your body should have and want.
Well, I first have to have extra permission to purchase it for the whole family because that's five times as expensive now.
But remember,
right now,
this is not reality.
Yes,
this is dream world. So if you're going to feed the whole family like you're going to feed you, are you going to? You get to decide.
Right.
But what does that come out to dollar-wise a week or a month if you were buying groceries the way you need to have permission for?
I think it would probably add $200 or $300. I think. But then I also kind of think that it would probably cut down on money, too, because I wouldn't be buying a bunch of the crap that we have in the house right now, either.
Yeah. Okay. So that's your brain wiggling right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We start to give ourselves permission, and then our brain says, yeah, but. So pretend you buy everything you buy now, because the kids like all the stuff you buy. You buy everything you buy now, and there's the good food that you know your body wants. How much more would that be a week?
Oh, gosh, a week, probably
$50. You're not going to scrimp when you go to the grocery store. You're going to have all of the stuff your body loves.
It would probably be an extra $50. It wouldn't be that much.
Okay. So, $50, I know with the married couple, there's a place where you guys, some amount you have to ask your spouse, some you don't. Is $50 extra on groceries something you'd have to ask James about?
No, not even.
Okay, so then the only person's permission you need is yours.
Yes.
Okay. So when you print this out, I'm not even saying spend the $50 this week. I'm saying write yourself the permission slip, just like you'd write the kids the permission slip, and put it somewhere where you see it a couple of times a day. I have permission to spend $50 extra a week so that I can eat well. And let your mind start playing with that permission. Okay? What is the emotion when you think about doing that? Because the yeah buts don't just go away because I just said that to you. Does it feel like exciting? Does it feel like, crap, now I can't hide anymore? What's the feeling when you think about actually executing on that?
Guilt, because I let half of the stuff go to waste anyway because we eat out all the time. So I buy all this stuff, and then some, you know, I'll buy a mixture of the really good stuff and the regular stuff, whatever. But,
yeah,
you know, right now 50% of it's going to waste. So I think I would start to feel guilty knowing that that's probably going to happen.
Okay.
But that's probably
so
another
say
thing
you,
back.
Okay. So this is a perfect example of just letting your brain do what it does. Okay. So let's play that out to the end. Because this is a trigger. The trigger says, okay, I got permission, but then I'm going to end up throwing half of it away. Okay, so say you do. You spend $50 extra a week for a year. You end up throwing $30 of that $50 away consistently all year long. So what's that? $30 a week times 50 weeks is $1,500 that you have wasted in a year. But your body is 40 pounds lighter, and it's consistently staying there. Was it worth throwing half, more than half of the stuff away? Because every time you went to go eat, there's some stuff that just makes you salivate. You're like, oh, yeah. You've lost 40 pounds.
Yeah,
your energy is up. Okay.
It's definitely worth it.
So there's a whole bunch of other steps in between there. You know, we might would do an exercise where you buy the $50 worth and you look at what's left at the end of the week, hone that in to what a week's worth looks like and how much head drama does it take you to go to the store a second time. And there's a bunch of work in between there, but it all starts with letting your brain just play it all the way to the end.
Ooh.
Right. So what's the reverse? Would it be worth an extra $1,500 in your pocket to hold on to this 40 pounds and probably gain another 10?
Hell no.
Okay. There's your hell no. Okay. And when we start executing is when the permission slip is a hell yes. Like, hell yeah, I can spend $50 on that.
Yeah.
We're spending $50 every time we go out to a restaurant. Of course I can spend $50 on that.
Yep. That's
yeah, that's a different place than Weight Watchers counting points. It's a different place of feeding yourself. All right. Kylie, your turn. Permission slip. What do you need permission for?
You know what? It's kind of odd because I don't really answer to anyone. I'm my own person. I can do whatever I want. So
right.
I kind of feel like I have permission to do whatever I want / need to do to kind of to get this done. But then I just don't. So I have I'd have to spend more money because I could do that if I wanted to.
Right. But it's okay. So money was her. Money is an issue that she's worked on for the entire time that she and I have been associated. But
so
there
long.
Is a reason.
Yeah.
Well, but you're not nearly the same person with money that you were when we first met.
No, that
so
is true.
It's always a growing process. So I would offer to you, I would invite you to know that there is something that you don't have permission for. Otherwise, your body would not be carrying the extra weight. Right? So it might be permission to speak your mind. It might be permission to reinvent yourself. It might be permission to just be at this weight and let go of the should.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something that keeps us from getting the things that we speak are important to us but have not happened yet.
It's almost like it's a permission to kind of feel fear around it, but do it anyway. Like it's kind of because I kind of think I use my weight as an excuse to stay in my job. If that makes I use my weight as an excuse to stay there. And I know that, and I use my weight as an excuse to stay stuck in other parts of my life, I guess. And I've got other things in my mind that I'd like to do, but I've put them off. So I think it's permission, giving myself permission to kind of expand, but not expand in my body. Like it's sort of...
So think about that. Think about what you just said. Your body, because these messages are body related. Your heart, your soul, your inner wisdom wants to expand. And every other place it could expand is contracted. And so your body expands. Okay.
It's permission to be seen and heard. Permission to be seen and heard.
Which is huge. But I will tell you, that was my goal for 2017. I went to 2 conferences across the United States and boldly said when I walked into both of them, like, my thing is to be seen and scared spitless.
Yeah.
But I, on the other side, it's freedom. It's like, wow, what was I so worried about? And culminated in the pictures. I had headshots taken back in October. And so being seen is a real limiter. Okay, so let's play your brain out like we did with April. Okay, so tomorrow, your company, when you walk in, they say, hey, we're furloughing everybody for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not, after on Friday of this week, you're not fired, but you don't have a paycheck, and as soon as we get back up, you can come back to work. What would happen? What would you do?
Oh, I'd leave. No question.
Okay, I'd and what would you do? Would you, yeah, and do what?
Well, I'd find another job, and I have no doubt in my mind that I would find another job. Like I'm not. I don't have that fear about that. I don't have that fear about me not being able to do whatever I put my mind to. I don't know. I don't think I'd find that. In fact, I think I'd find it like almost like a sigh of relief if they said to me, we're not paying you anymore. Yeah. I could walk away and go, see ya. Thanks for having me. See ya.
Okay.
I'm out of here. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah, so that was the hell yes about leaving. So the reason you don't leave now is money? Or is it just that threshold of taking the action?
I think it's more a case of I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'd do.
Okay.
Yeah, but if I was forced to have to find something else, I would just find something else. It may not necessarily be what I really want to do, but it would be, it would be something.
Okay. So perhaps the permission that you need immediately for this 30 days is permission to gather data, to find out what it would take in order to change those things, right? That doesn't mean that you're going to leave your job or that you're going to do anything that puts your job in jeopardy, but it might mean you do a job search as if you were going to be no longer employed on Friday to see what the market is. Who do you know? Who would you talk to? And the reason that works, and it's as good or better than eating, is because your mind gets to have something to do, which is all it wants anyway. It wants to have a task. It loves patterns, and it loves efficiency. And so, especially if we're living a life that doesn't really challenge us, you know, I can do my job as I complete. It's really good. It's not. Then food becomes the thing that your mind focuses on. Okay? So the bigger picture is expansion. The smaller thing underneath that might start with data collection. Like, what would I do if that happened? Oh, I would call this person. I would get my resume ready. I would
whatever that looks like for your geography. And your mind then starts to go, oh, we really could do that. Because just a while ago when you were speaking, I hear supreme confidence. And I was kind of expecting to say, I don't want to sit in front of a new employer and then be judged and, you know, they're always going to judge me by my body first and then my skills afterwards. But you didn't say any of that. You had pretty solid confidence about being able to get a good job.
And you know what? It would be a different thing to saying, it would be a different thing if it was a social situation. Like I have more confidence around my job and my ability to work and my ability to do a job than I have in social situations. So if you're talking about a social situation, I'd have a totally different story. I'd want to run screaming.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So for now, that if that were true, if you had permission to expand, and maybe it starts with working those other places, how would that change what you do with food? That's the bigger question. When I'm honoring what my body's telling me, my intuition is saying, I'm bored, this doesn't feel good, I have to make myself go to work. That's your inner wisdom, your belly wisdom. And then if I use that, if I connect to it and go, okay, that's true, I do, and I have my own permission to expand, watch what happens to some of your food choices. Because once that's off, there is a shift there. Okay. So now let's connect all of those pieces. Same thing as April. Print that. If you printed it off, write it on there. Kylie has permission to expand and stick it on your bathroom mirror, somewhere where you see it, and feed your mind with that thought. Okay. So now let's talk about the shame that is the underlayer of everything that we've talked about. April, you said guilt a while ago. And guilt we're pretty aware of. Like, we know when it comes and we feel it and we kind of brush it away or feel awkward for a day or two until it passes. Guilt, the difference between them, guilt says I did something bad. Like, oh, crap, I ate a whole bag of Doritos. Shame says I am bad. Like, I could never change. I'm just bad. I'm just always going to, my mother used to say, I'm just always going to be fat. That's who I am. And so shame, the way to deal with it is to speak it. And that only can happen in a trust relationship, a place where you feel safe that you're not going to get more shame dumped on you. And so what happens, especially in family relationships, happens to me with my sister. From the second I pick up the phone and hear her voice, I am just swimming in a sea of shame. I do it to her. I haven't figured out how to stop that. And she does it to me. And we both get off the phone feeling miserable. And used to, I would go straight from those phone calls to eat. It was much of a trigger as if someone was standing and pointing a gun at me. Okay, so for the shame worksheet, let me get mine up here so I'm looking at you. We're going to go back to how does it feel in your body so that you'll recognize it when it shows up, so that it's not just lurking in the background and doing its damage and we're not aware of it's there. So the first question, April, and I'll send you this worksheet, is what's the first thing that you think of when you hear the word shame? First thoughts when you hear the word shame.
My grandmother.
Grandma. And how does it feel? What's the feeling instantly? You see her name on the caller ID.
Yes, I actually did while we were on this call, and I immediately felt it because I haven't called her back, and so that's more shame. No, but it's just something she used to tell me. That was her word. You know, shame on you for this, shame on you for that, shame, 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 shame. But so yeah, it's a very strong gut reaction when I feel
so
that.
Tight gut. All right. You're gonna think these are silly, but hang with me. What color is it? Does it make you see red? Is it kind of puke yellow? Is it gray?
It's almost oh my gosh, I remember doing this with you before, and I thought you were cuckoo. I get it. In this case, I think it's like yellow. It's almost like an innocent yellow because it really takes me back to being a young child and being ashamed of things that I had no idea why I was ashamed of them or why I should be.
Okay, and so that's good. Like, so think about that. If you're feeling shame, which I am inviting you to just trust me, that you're feeling shame around food. Every time shame is one of the things about emotions in your body, they only have a couple of different versions of any one emotion. Your head can tell you 25 definitions of shame. Your body probably has two or three. And so every time that we're doing the things with food that we do, shame is present, and this feeling, some version of this feeling that you're describing right now is present, which as a kid made you confused as hell, like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And hide, right? Like, if she can't see me, I can't be in trouble. And then kind of that approval-seeking of, are you still mad at me? All of that happens in a blink, right as you're reaching for the refrigerator door.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay? So we've got the color. What would it taste like?
Mm.
So go back, hear her say it. Shame on you, April.
What does it taste like? I don't know.
Okay. My answer for that is liver. I do not like liver. Like you want to brush your tongue with your hand.
See, for that particular one, I want to say mashed potatoes just because that's what we always made. And it just takes me back to that. But I know that's not, you know, I know what we're going for.
Hey,
but
Wait. Your combination for shame doesn't have to look like mine. So
right.
Mashed potatoes would make sense to go along with the innocent yellow.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's mashed potatoes or like an ice cream or something.
Okay. So that even makes me more. You just taught me something. You might be the first person I've ever had this particular deal with, and that makes me excited. So give me one more before I tell you where I'm going. What does it smell like?
What does it smell like? It smells, oh my gosh, I want to say it's so funny. It smells like grass because we always ate in the backyard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so think about that picture. Little girl with her grandma in the backyard eating things she loves in the grass. That's what shame is for you. Why wouldn't you eat? When you feel that feeling, why wouldn't you eat?
And it makes sense to me saying those things because I'm so confused constantly about the right things to eat and what to do. And it really is this tug of war that I'm constantly feeling like I'm going through. And I think it was, now that we're talking about this, and I never really thought about it before, but it was always, are you eating again? Why do you have the refrigerator open? Are you looking for food? And then on the other hand, it was, well, you better clean your plate. You know, you better eat all of it. And here, have thirds, you know?
Okay. So I'm pretty sure you just stumbled on a big piece for you because this is like a double whammy.
I think so.
By definition, we think of shame as a negative thing. And if we can imagine a negative enough connotation with it, then we'll take a different action, right? But in your case, you've got this great picture that's been mismatched with the emotion of shame, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if I told you that, no, when James knocks you on your ass, that's love. No. When he tries to run over you with the car, that's love. And so
right.
Think about how battered woman, they really believe that, right? No, but he loves me. It's that really blaring mismatch of reality with an emotion. And in this case, shame, conditioned from the 7-8-year-old girl until now, has this feeling on it. So it's going to take a little while for that to sink in and really get to your heart. But watch for that to show up this week as you're eating. When you're feeling that kind of innocent yellow, the sunshine, the grass, grandma feeling, that's a clue for your body not to eat.
Okay,
so it's a head twist for sure. But
it really
is. I stumbled on that all this time. And you gave me a new tool. I hadn't imagined that was what you were going to say.
No, okay. I didn't either. It just popped out.
Okay, Kylie, your turn. What is the first thing that you think of when you hear the word shame?
It's kind of funny. I can't get an association with shame for some reason. And I even looked up a definition while you were talking, and it sort of says, you know, a painful
yep.
feeling of humiliation or distress caused by a conscious or wrong or foolish behavior. And
yep.
when you say shame to me, I think more about situations I'm in where I've not fit somewhere or I've, And so I think about judgment. So I don't think about a person. Like, I think about being judged because of how
yes.
I look.
Okay.
I think
so, yes, so judgment. So what happens, and again, your experience doesn't need to be the same as mine. I'm just poking around.
Okay.
So
yeah.
when you watch what I just did with April, I was yeah. holding hands with her and we're opening doors. No, not in that
yeah.
one. Oop, not in that one. Oh, crap, look what's in there. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I walk through an airport, I've
yeah.
already judged whether I can do that or not physically. Can I do that? Because I don't want to be embarrassed.
Yes.
And so I know that I'm able-bodied, but I
yes.
for sure feel everything from compassion to extreme shaming. Like, why would you even think
yes.
you could get on a plane? As you enter and you start to walk down
yeah.
the aisle and find your seat. There's at least 5 people on that plane that are just praying to God, like, don't let her be mine. Don't let her sit next to me. Don't let her sit next to me. Don't let her sit next to me.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, though, because I set my life up in a way that I don't have to think about that in a way. So I'll do things like I'll either book business class if I can afford to do that, or I book myself 2 seats. So I know I'm going to
okay.
have that space I'm not going to have, but see, I've set myself up in a way so I don't have to feel that in a way. So
except that just because you don't feel it doesn't mean that it's not present.
No, and I get that too.
That's the trick,
yeah.
right?
Right. Yeah.
So, and again, as persons with 300 plus pounds, you do set your life up that way because we didn't stop being human. We didn't stop having emotions. We are not all of that extra tissue. So, yes, we set our lives up so that we don't have to do that. But what would happen if a extreme emergency and you have to get on a plane and the seat you've got is in the middle aisle and coach? What happens as you walk on the plane? Not from them, just in your body.
It's terror in my body. It's a false sense of bravery on my face and terror in my
yes.
body.
Exactly, right? Because you come back to defend yourself in resistance. Like, screw you, I pay for my seat too. And we attack back, even with it, if it's just with our mind, where we're being really cordial on the outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That is extreme shame. All right?
Yeah.
So imagine that same scenario and the flight is 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, everywhere in Australia is 3 hours.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You don't do a flight in Australia that's not much less than 3 hours. Actually, no, that's not true. But it's, anywhere I'm going from Australia is 3 hours.
3 hours that you are trying to hold your arms across you. You're trying not to let your knees touch their knees. You can't get up and go to the bathroom because that's going to be awful.
Yeah.
That shame, that level of shame is kind of an undertone to us, like the streamer at the bottom of CNN. And that ticker tape.
Yeah.
It's just always kind of there. Okay. So
I also think, though, why is that not enough for me to lose the weight? Like, I don't understand why that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the short answer to that is because the thoughts that shame generates keep you moving in a negative direction.
Mm.
Right? It's not possible to have shame be a primary emotion and lose weight.
Mm.
It will never happen.
Mm.
That's kind of how this PhD program was born. If I can show you how to first realize that your body is working magnificently, right?
Yes,
it's having these emotions. It's having the wisdom. It is pumping blood farther. If I can get you to connect to your body and see how it is showing up for you, and I can show you why there's things to love about this body, then you will adopt habits. Fail, get up, building habits that lead to a smaller body. And then when you are thin, you will continue those good habits and the weight doesn't come back.
Okay,
so if you've ever watched somebody who's had gastric bypass, and forgive me, April, I'm not talking about you, gastric bypass, they lose 100 pounds in 6 months and then they still hate themselves. They still think the other. Well, yeah.
It is.
And so shame. When you just you're kind of insulated from shame, but when you hear the word, you go, "I don't want any part of that." Or what do you think the first thought is when you hear shame?
I really can't. I can't connect anything to it. As I said, I can connect situations where I've felt shame, but it doesn't spring anything to mind instantly, that word.
Okay.
Yeah, because I've kind of blocked it.
Okay. So I'm going to take you through the other steps as well,
and it
is not unusual. April and I did this particular piece of work 2 years ago, and she totally, like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And so this is a big concept. But we're planting seeds in your brain.
Yeah,
and then I would posit that over the next week, you'll see something that goes, that might be shame. Because we're now looking at that. All right. I don't want to feel it anytime I don't have to, but I for sure don't want to let it be present and not address it. Right?
Yeah,
so I don't want us to be stuck in shame. But I want us to sweep the floor every time it shows up. All right, so if you were feeling shame, so go back to the airplane scenario just so you get color.
No, I can.
What color do you put?
It's gray. But it's not like, it's sort of like stormy weather gray, but not just gray sky kind of thing. It's like right before a storm gray.
Okay, all right. So it has that kind of heavy feel to it, like a closing in.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
It's that blue, green, gray. Like it's that,
dark
blue.
Yeah.
Doom.
Gray. Good. Okay. Oh, that's really good. Okay. What does it taste like?
You know what? It's one of those things. It's kind of like, and I don't know if you call it the same thing here as what we do, but it's like tapioca. You know, the little tapioca balls. That unless you put something with it, it tastes like nothing. It's kind of like chewing on little rubbery balls, and it's that mouthful of tapioca. It's like that mouthful of tapioca with no flavor. It's just chewing on something that is not going anywhere, but doesn't taste like anything. Like it's,
Okay, so I like that image too. That's totally different than mine or April's.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's just like I'm chewing, but why did I do, why is this in my mouth?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But the texture of tapioca kind of covers everything. You would almost have to drink something to rinse that out of your mouth, that taste out.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
What would it smell like?
Overripe bananas. Like,
ooh.
Like really overripe bananas.
Okay.
That almost rotting banana. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So the same thing. If you see any one of those that show up, and it's going to be subtle, you're going to go, oh, there's that thing. We were just talking about that. I want to invite you to consider that shame might be somewhere in the background. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so these give us, like, early GPS. It makes me think of, like, how – let me think of a good example. Like deja vu. Like, mm-hmm. something – like, I've seen this before. And it's your early warning, like, something's up. Something's going on, and I'm not – I wasn't aware I'm feeling shame, but that tapioca taste is here. So shame must be here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it lets us, as we get deeper into what should I eat and how much should I move and all of the other mechanics of losing weight, it gives us a chance to deal with those emotions before we eat them. Mm.
Right?
It connects you to your body in another way. It says, okay, yeah, no, I heard you. You're feeling shame, and you need me to pay attention. Okay? So let's move to the bottom part of the page. Let me make sure that we haven't already covered it with just a thing. Okay, there's some of them we covered and some of them we haven't. When I talk about shame, so this conversation, when I talk intensely like this about shame, I feel blank.
Did you say you're starting with me?
Yeah.
Well, this time I felt clarity. I think the other times that we've talked about it, once I got it, once I understood what I was feeling, I think it brought on anxiety feeling all of those old feelings again. But this time I feel like it's brought me some clarity.
Okay. And I can talk about shame with blank.
A person?
Yeah. Who could you talk about shame with?
You.
Right?
If what?
Could you have a conversation about shame with Nicole?
Oh, yes.
Which is her best friend. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why could you talk about it with her?
Well, we're very similar. I mean, she doesn't have a weight problem or anything like that, but we have very similar stories.
Okay.
Different ways. Yes, we totally get each other on that.
Could you talk? Could you talk with James about shame?
Yeah.
Okay. Could you talk with your mom about shame?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Devin, which is her oldest daughter. Could you talk to Devin about shame?
That would be such it wouldn't work so well. She's very into herself and very bubbly and, you know, it's just not something that she would be interested in talking about. It wouldn't be a conversation.
Right. So the question is designed to let you see a couple of things. First, that you, in order to talk about shame of any kind, you have to trust the person that you're talking to. And on some level, they have to have unconditional love for you and not judge you for showing that part of your heart.
Oh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for some people, that's the whole reason they have a coach, because it's something they can't talk to anybody else in their life about. And as your circle expands, I think if I would ask you that question 2 years ago, your answer would have been different. And so, again, that's a growth. You probably still could have gotten done, Nicole. I don't know if James would have been on that list or not.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Okay? Because
shame, when you talk with another person about shame, it's literally like taking your two hands and opening your heart, fully exposed, and then standing there with no control over what they're going to do. You've just shown them the deepest negative emotion it's possible to feel other than grief, and now you're going to trust them not to hurt you more or shame you more. Okay, so in that moment, you've got trust, you've got unconditional love, you've got vulnerability, which is that opening, and you've got shame, which is the emotion that you're attempting to talk about. Okay, so you get pride points for sure when you get off of this call to go, that was a really great thing. I was willing to say what's true and look myself in the eye emotionally. Okay, Kylie, your turn. When I talk about shame, I feel. So this conversation about shame, what are you feeling as we have gone through this conversation?
When I was talking about the situations where I felt shame, I almost felt numb, mm-hmm. like it's a numb feeling.
Okay.
But it sits in my chest as well, like I can feel it, like a heaviness in my chest. Yeah.
Okay. And when you have felt it in the past, does it lead to food? When you can't plan for it not to be there, does it lead to food or does it lead to destruction of some other kind?
Ultimately, yeah, it leads to food.
Yeah.
It may not be immediate, but yeah, it leads to food.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that, again, that skill comes in where over time you learn how to allow it, let it run its natural course without acting on it. That's kind of the primo where we're going in the coaching, in weight coaching, to be able to know how to know when a feeling's present, be able to put a name to it, allow it or feel it without taking any action. And when I first heard that, my teacher is Brooke Castillo, and she said, no, I want you to... I don't not only want you to buy Doritos, I want you to leave them out on the counter, don't put them in the pantry. And I was like, you don't understand, I will eat all of them. And she's like, that today you will, but there will come a time when you will walk past them and you will not want them. You truly will not want them when they are at your fingertips. And that sounded like a big old fairy tale to me. But that is the place I reached, and I'm past that. And now my body's losing weight. So that's kind of the apex of where we're going. All right. And then the last question, I can talk about shame with whom?
Be my best friend, Pam. Yeah.
Okay. And why can you talk about it with her?
Trust. And I know she understands me as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. And... is there anybody else in your circle, or she's that one friend?
She'd be that one friend. I couldn't talk to my sister about it because my sister would want to try to fix me. And I couldn't really talk to my mum about it because she would make it somehow about her. And she caused that feeling in me.
Right.
Yeah.
So think about that. I have a mother that lived on shame as well, and that might be why you are more resistant to it, because you watch somebody else steep in shame. That's frustrating. That's let me fix you. That really, again, it causes a whole realm of emotion in the person watching, and it usually ends up with like. Guilt and shame are my mother's two main emotions. And I let go of guilt a long time before I discovered that I still had shame. But anytime guilt comes, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm out. Guilt does not serve at all. Okay, so now we have all of this information, and this is how you will use it over the next set of days. You currently have the things that we talked about first, which are the triggers that make you eat. So go back and look at your notes with that. So your Kylie's side was hopelessness around work, living with her mom and kind of having a shared food,
on April's side was the husband going out to eat, connecting with community. You have those triggers that drive thoughts, okay? So the thoughts were, you know, I don't want to be left out. I'm not ready to get another job, whatever that thought is that it drives. And the results of those thoughts and feelings are then action that is sabotaging. And then we sabotage, we eat, and then we have a set of thoughts about that, and we keep going in this great big circle. Okay? So if we can look at the triggers, figure out what the shame is, the guilt or the shame there, and we can address the shame, then it's possible to not be triggered by that event anymore. Okay? So it doesn't happen overnight, but once you dig deep enough in the trigger and the shame, then your thinking changes. And we have ways to measure. I have ways to measure that as well. It's part of why we keep notes on what you said today and then maybe like what you say in 3 months, because your thinking shifts very subtly. Okay? And the way that you get through all of that is the permission slip. I have permission to expand. I have permission to spend $50 a week on really great food. And that permission will drive a completely different action. Okay? So let me ask, open it up and say, what do you have questions on or is not clear? Anything up to this point that you wish I would be quiet and let you speak? So, Kylie, you get to go first this time. Where are your questions?
Yeah. Nothing really at the moment. No, I think I'm following where you're at with it. I think I have to get my own head around shame and what that means for me. Like I can find moments of shame, but I can't connect shame to my, like, last night's eating mashed potato kind of thing. Like, I can't connect that, and that's what I have to think about, I think. Yeah.
Okay. April, do you have something you might want to say to her about how you walked through that process? Because you did not think you felt shame at all when you first saw this.
Oh, but I was so wrong. I don't know. It's just, it's so individual. It's so individual.
Okay.
And I just would say just be open, and I think you will be more aware. Like Melinda said, when things pop up, if something resonates, that it might be shame. But I mean, we're all just so different.
Okay. So, let me ask some questions, Kylie, about how you learn. Are you a visual learner? You're an auditory learner? Like, how do you assimilate new information when you're in a learning environment?
I think I usually need to see it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I love trying to give you mind pictures so that we kind of get out of our head and again more in your body and start to learn to listen for that. I called them whispers because in the very beginning, hearing your body is like somebody whispering and you turning your head and saying, what? And that, like, I didn't quite hear what you said. So right now, shame seems to not be very present in your world. So I would try to imagine something like being at a big party and seeing the little kids, like, for a half second. Like, they're tucked in behind the chairs, and they pop their head up, and you saw them once, and you're kind of watching, like, where'd that kid go? And you don't see him for a while, and then across the room, you see him from the back kind of running away from you, right? Your mind starts to make associations. Oh, man, that's that same little boy that I saw a while ago over the back of the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little bit later, he comes and sits down by the lady that you've been talking to all along, right? Shame is tricky like that. That it, especially if you're not using it a whole lot, it's looking for opportunities to come up. And you might not see it real often, or you might misidentify it when it is. And again, the attitude that you want to have when you're taking on this part of the work is curiosity instead of dread. Like, why are you there? Why are you there? April's example is really good. Like, why are you there? Oh, yeah, grandma and 30 years of conditioning. That's why you're there. Oh, in your case, I would guess, and I'm only guessing, but I'm guessing it's related to something with your mom, something in her set of habits. I know one thing for sure, that if you're human and breathing, it's there on some level. Even if you're totally well, if you've done all of this mind work and you've done well and you're managing food and you're in your perfect weight, shame is still on the spectrum of emotions. It will show up from time to time. Okay? So I don't want to take you to a dark, dark place. I want curiosity. Like, what maybe has been happening that I didn't even see? Because if I see it, then I've got some data to work with. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. April, did you have other questions, Kylie? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut
you. No, that's it. Thank you.
Cool. All right. April, question?
No, I don't.
Okay. So what I want you guys to think about for next week, is we're going to start talking about patterns, because the triggers make us take action, and our brain loves to do the things it knows how to do, right? So something as simple as not remembering how you drove home. Your brain drove home on the same road you've driven home on for 3 years. There are tons of things that it does. It loves them. I know exactly what I do. There's surety. There's efficiency. And those patterns will usually show up in the stories that we tell. And we tell our stories all the time. I could tell you 100 stories about my sister, twice that many about my mom, beautiful stories about my husband, Ken. Okay, stories about April and I and how we met. Everybody has stories, and particularly around weight loss, those stories work against you. Okay? So I'd like for you to come, I want you to think about the stories that defined turning points in your life. Okay? So it might be I had Tyler and was a single mom. And the next one might be I met James and my whole life shifted. And the next one might be I discovered the model and engaged in the coaching world and my life took a turn. Right? I want you to come up with three that are significant to you. Like, if the story of my life was written tomorrow, these are the three stories that would be there.
Okay.
Okay? So it does a couple of things. It makes you think about all the stories and sift down to three. Limiting. But those stories, because you've had to pick three, are usually the ones that either have the most joy or the most pain in them. And that will give us good data to talk next week is about how to go from damaged, so that's very close to the hopelessness that you described, Kylie, from just saying, like, I'm just broken. No matter what I do, I'm broken. To go from being damaged to being determined and tenacious. And the good thing about patterns is once you identify them, you can then figure out how to interrupt them. Right? So it might be that we figure out the trigger, and okay, so I can stop it at the trigger point. But if I can't stop it at the trigger point, if I know after that trigger comes, I've got A, B, C, and D, and I can quantify those, and maybe I can only stop it at D for this point in time. But the more I practice, now I can stop it when A happens. And your brain is so pliable. Neuroplasticity is the science of how you can change the actual pathways, the synapses that your thoughts take. It just wants to know what the routine is. It'll take the new routine the same way that it's done the old routine. Okay? So three stories. And I'm going to say you might want to write them out, maybe not, but we're going to try to describe them in 2 minutes. So, again, we're inviting ourselves to tell the facts and not get lost in the emotions. Okay, we'll solve the emotions soon enough, but for the process of this 30 days, we're going to try to stay in the facts of the story. Okay. And then I'll have another worksheet up in April. I'll get you access.
Okay.
Anything that you, out of the conversation that happened today, that you are willing to commit to for accountability for the next time that we're together? Anything that you want to reach for out of the conversation that we had today? Kylie?
I actually want to, it's kind of odd, I want to start moving my body. Like, it's hard work. Like, at my weight, it's hard work to move.
Yep.
But I want to,
yep.
I want to start moving it. And even if it just means walking to the back fence, which is, you know, I've got a huge yard, even if it means walking,
yep,
to the back fence a couple of times a day, just to, so I can start to feel my body, like I can start,
okay,
to listen to my body. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah, moving is a great way, right? So tell me how you would know if you were successful. When you come back and you're telling us what happened, how would you know you were successful?
I think it's just doing something daily. Like, it's knowing I've done something daily, and it doesn't need to be a half-hour walk or anything. It can just be 5 minutes,
yep,
of moving my body.
Yep. Okay, so I again, you're already ahead of the game. Your thinking is not as, let me see the word I wanted to use, not working against you nearly as hard as you might imagine, all right? Because you're not, you didn't say, I'm going to go sign up for a gym membership tomorrow, or you didn't say, I've got to have this rigid specimen, or the So what we're looking for that's going to work over the long term is pushing yourself harder than we have up to this point, right? So we're going to require a little more of ourselves. But our body gets to decide when it's enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Right. So at this weight, there our body does have limitations. But we're not in a wheelchair. So, of course, it can walk out and it can move more than we are now. And your body will thank you for that. But we're not going to go to the point of burning ourselves out or injuring ourselves. Okay. So, I'm going to give you a couple of things to go with that. As you're moving, I want you to just check in with yourself before you move. Like, okay, like, how do I feel? Like, take a snapshot of yourself physically. How do I feel? And when you come back in and you're finished, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So notice, do my legs feel a little stronger? Am I hurting in my back? Do I feel exhilarated? Do I have more breath? And give yourself that intentional connection as you're starting and as you're finishing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
And then consistency matters. Because consistency is how we build habits, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So good deal. So you're gonna walk at least once a day, and you'll come back here and tell us about that whenever we're back together next week. Okay.
Beautiful.
Good deal.
Yep.
All right. April, are you willing to commit to anything? And if so, what is it?
Well, with my injury, I'm not walking. What I'm doing right now, I am I'm tracking.
It
my
can
feet.
Be anything.
No, I want to commit to tracking my food. I'm not making changes. I'm just trying to build a habit, because it's very eye opening for me, and it's been very helpful. It's only been 3 days, but it's been really helpful for me.
It just keeps you on. So going back to your deal about your worst fears, continuing to lie to yourself, it's just data where you know for sure, as opposed to remembering what you ate.
Yes. Well, because what I would do before is I would stop tracking after a certain time of day, and it's as if those calories didn't enter my body because I didn't want to admit to them. it doesn't work.
Those creative things we do. I'm laughing because I do it too, honey.
I've tried it too. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah,
it doesn't work.
Like bourbon doesn't count, right?
Right.
Okay. So you're using my fitness pal?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, as we leave each other, you want to write your permission slips, put them somewhere where you can see them. You want to think about the commitment that you just agreed to and feel the love that's having something that you can better to do. That commitment should feel like you're loving on yourself, not like you are punishing or going through the motions. Right. So if any one of those shows up, like, oh my God, I have to walk, I thought I was gonna do it, she's gonna ask me a question. Then we still have
Melinda, did you lose your headset? Melinda? We can't really hear you right now.
Oh, wait.
I'm sorry.
Can you hear me now?
There you go. Yeah.
Better? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. As you're doing the things that you committed to, you're wanting to look at that as I'm building a habit. I want this what I'm doing, logging my food or moving my body to be like brushing my teeth. Okay, so there's not a lot of drama around brushing your teeth. We don't hate to do it. We don't avoid it. We also don't skip it. Okay, so if you find yourself in self-judgment where it feels heavy or it feels like I really don't want to do this or you find yourself eating because you don't want to do it, then we will pick a different commitment next week and we'll talk about whatever that trigger was. Okay. So let me talk to Kylie just a little bit more about what your, if I send you an email, is that the best way to communicate? Do you do Facebook?
I'm on Facebook.
I don't know your last name. If you're willing to share that, I can find you.
Yeah, I'm in your group.
You're on the perfection group.
Yes, perfection. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So then, your book. I owe you the book, and I'm excited to do that. Would you rather have a physical book or an electronic book?
Oh, electronic book's perfectly fine. Yeah, it's a pain in the butt to mail stuff here. So yeah, no.
Okay.
Electronic's perfect. Yeah.
Good deal. Okay. So I'll be doing that through Amazon sometime between now and the next time that we have a phone call. And then I'm working on getting you access to the other bonus, the unpack your emotional baggage.
Oh, yes.
It's on the same platform on Teachable, but I've got a couple of steps to take to get you into that. So just know that that's coming your way as well. All right.
Okay,
so wonderful work. When you get off the phone, give yourself at least 5 minutes, 10 is better, and just sit and let this conversation replay in your head. Let it soak into your heart. And be proud. This was not easy work, and you invested in yourself and locked the world outside for an hour and a half. So if you need me in the meantime, catch me on Facebook, and otherwise I will meet you guys back here same time, same place, okay?
Great.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.